News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. So much happening in this world. Controversial, interesting. Of course, in New York City, the place I'm at right now, where we have committed $30 million to make city-run grocery stores. As if that is good news. It's amazing. Also, what's astounding to me is how many people cannot get over the fact that Donald Trump is president, still talking about the 25th Amendment as if he's not, as if that's actually going to work. He actually has people in his administration that like him, even the ones that didn't, that he hired. We're not going to do it. And number two is the ongoing conflicts and how many people will just, whatever the president does, they'll be against him, especially now. And I think when it comes to the Iran situation, they're really going to end up with egg on their face, including the Pope. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
So I think what you're going to see, actually, is a consolidation on the Democrat side. I think that Swalwell support will be split between those two very unattractive options, Katie Porter and Tom Steyer.
Yes, that is the front runner to be the next governor of California, Steve Hilton. California's race is now wide open. Can a Republican like Steve Hilton slip into power in that very, very, very blue state?
Number two.
But the decision by both Swalwell and Gonzalez to step aside means that Speaker Mike Johnson's razor-thin majority will stay razor-thin. He can only afford to lose one Republican on any party line vote.
Yeah, that is true. Corruption in Congress as two high-profile lawmakers head for the ethical exits. What it means for the balance of power, and will they ever get their act together and fund the DHS?
Number one.
Right now we have a blockade. They're doing no business. I didn't like seeing boats come out if they were doing business with Iran, but if they weren't, no boats came out. So now Iran is doing absolutely no business, and we're going to keep it that way very easily.
Loving the blockade. It's now in place. Day two, as the world watches, and even Pope deals himself in. And we have the latest. I just love that the fact the Pope comes out and says, I don't like war. Get used to it. We don't pray. War has nothing to do with the Bible. When war's all over the Bible. Hardly a biblical scholar, but it's all over the Bible, first off. Number two, we never pray for wins in a battle. Allies against Axis powers. Who are you pulling for? We know. Nothing to do with you, Pope Leo. Pope Pius the 100th, whatever it was, really took no positions against the Nazis. That took a lot of courage, didn't it? Mussolini and Hitler. Kind of on the fence. Not a word from the Pope about the slaughter of between 30 and 41,000 Iranians in cold blood who had the audacity to go in the streets and ask for water and freedom. That's it. Not a word. But if you take the fight to a country that chants death to America, that's a war of choice. I got a huge problem with that. Do you know that they've hung 1,500 people in Iran? Did the Pope comment on that? Did anybody comment on that? Did Democrats weigh in on that? We used to all agree that was heinous. Now, because Trump's involved, it isn't. I'm not going to change my opinion of it. I don't think Trump does everything right. I don't think anybody I know does everything right. But I don't get up in the morning going, whatever Trump does, it's got to be wrong. And when it comes to Iran, it's really a huge leap to think it's got to be wrong. But it is. So here we're at right now. Strait is closed. Iran has stopped moving ships through. We turned around a Chinese ship already. Nothing's getting through. Nothing's getting out. There's hundreds of millions of barrels of oil that's just sitting on the ocean. Some tankers are ready to get filled up. Others are ready to dump. Nothing's happening. Hundreds of ships are heading to America to fill up their super tankers. Kind of good news for us, but it is a global market. So where are we at with the ceasefire? Well, the time's ticking, and it looks like there could be talks as early as Thursday. How did the first talks go? J.D. Vance on with Brett last night, cut three.
I wouldn't just say that things went wrong. I also think things went right. We made a lot of progress, but we also made very clear, and I think this is part of the progress we made, what the terms were the United States could make some accommodation, what terms we were flexible on, and what things we absolutely needed to see in order for the President of the United States to feel like he was getting a good deal. And so we laid those things out. We had some good conversations. I think it was the first time that you had ever seen the Iranian government, the U.S. government, meet at such a high level, maybe in the history of the current leadership of Iran. So that's, I think, a positive.
So I thought it was interesting. He just said what Donald Trump wants, what we want with the Trump administration might have been a better term. But J.D. Vance afforded himself well last night. Gave no details about negotiations. It was a short statement after. Took his 18-hour plane ride home and did Brett Baer's interview. But I wouldn't mind of hearing more details about it. Couple of things. All the uranium, 1,000 pounds, I don't know what the conversion is, but roughly 1,000 pounds of uranium got to come out. We got to supervise it. We got to do it. We can do it. Number two, the Strait of Hormuz can never be touched again. And somehow we got to confirm that. Never be touched again, ever. And if I'm these other European nations or these Far East nations, I'm finding another way to transport my oil. I was struck that Saudi Arabia is back up to pre-war levels, diverting through the Red Sea, going through alternate pipelines. However they're doing it, they're back to full levels. And I just love that we're blocking the port. It has totally flipped the script. And Democrats can't handle it. I heard Senator Warner over the weekend say, I don't know what he's in. I don't know what the point of that is. What don't you get? Everyone's going to stop making money now and force everyone to the table. And then I see this story that 40 nations got together in a summit to decide how they're going to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Do you know when they're going to do it? After the war's over. Wow, that takes guts. So I know your feelings were hurt that you weren't briefed ahead of time. But since that time, you've had plenty of time to adjust, understand. This is a problem with the entire region. And we still have more chips to play. And it would be great to have additional ships and different escort vessels to give us a hand. Vice Admiral Robert Harwood on Fox and Friends talking about the IRGC is actually in power. And that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons why J.D. Vance walked away. He realized the people in the room, the speaker and the foreign minister, don't have the power to do a deal, no matter how good or bad it was. Cut 10.
The last and only component not in the negotiations is the IRGC itself. And don't forget, this is the Islamic Revolution, and they are the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps. I think they are the decision makers, the real power in Iran, the real element suppressing its people. And at the end of the day, if you remove all these programs they've built to maintain power, then they become at risk. And so they're both closely tied to each other. And if they won't negotiate, we take them off the table.
Yeah, and also the length of flight of these missiles, these medium-range, long-range missiles. We already know they lied. They said they don't have long-range missiles. They got long-range missiles. They revealed them. And by the way, dumb move to reveal them, because you could always say the U.S. has nothing to worry about. ICBMs are years away, and we don't have distances that can reach European capitals. 3 days into the war, we find out they got a missile that can reach European capitals. So there you go, Europe. No longer can you say it's not my problem. So we'll see what happens next. I got to salute Mark Penn, Democratic strategist, worked for both Clintons, who now is doing a lot of numbers work and will work for everybody. But for the most part, you know where he stands. But the Democratic Party, led by Mamdani and AOC, he has no patience for. He's a more of a moderate center-left guy. And he came out and pointed out stuff on social media, and I just want to share it with you. He compared Trump's approach to John F. Kennedy-style blockade. He frames out Obama-style was concessions. The Bush-style was full troop deployment. The blockade-style is JFK. And it worked with JFK. And he thinks this predicts regime modification in Iran is going to work because of this blockade. He argues that he flips the pressure. Instead of Iran threatening global economy, the U.S. is closing down the global economy and we're diverting people here. And you have a president that said, I'm not sure if gas prices will go down. I want them to, but I'm not sure. So anybody who thinks the president's panicking, did you see him at the UFC fight on Saturday? He seemed to be panicking. Do you see him panicking as he accepted Uber Eats yesterday to emphasize the big, beautiful bill that no longer charges taxes on tips. And a woman who delivered the meal got $11,000 in tips last year and was able to keep it. So I think the president is playing. This is all part of it. Now, John Stewart, who I think is hysterical, even though he's way to the left and exaggerates and takes people out of context, but he's funny, can mock it all he wants, can say the president seems unhinged, and people like John Brennan can do the same thing too. But I point to other people like CNN, like Michael Smirkanish, and I point to what William Barr has said. And they also they talked about how what then-Ambassador Haley has said. All at separate times, the president says to them, tell them I'm crazy. Tell Kim Jong-un I'm crazy. Let them think that I am unhinged. That's part of it. Michael Smirkanish says, that tweet about civilization, blowing up the civilization, do you think for a second he wasn't talking about us? And he was actually talking to a group of people who chant death to America in a language they understand. And what he pointed to is what we pointed to on Friday and he pointed to on Saturday. What happened after he did that? Unhinged, and that's air quotes, Truth Social post. Within 2 days, we're having meetings in Pakistan. Got everybody's attention, especially the whack jobs that are still alive in Iran. And they are whack jobs. And go ahead. Keep pretending that Trump isn't serious. Go ahead. How's that working out for you? We come back. You two use scandals in Washington, especially the Eric Swalwell one. Congressman Rodriguez Gonzalez, I feel bad about. I got to know him a little bit. He seems like a great guy. He had an affair with a woman in his office who sadly, tragically burned herself alive in response. That's been exposed. He decides not to run for re-election. After the Swalwell thing comes out, he decides, I'm going to resign right away. So Swalwell for Gonzalez. And that's going to be a tough seat for the Republicans to hold on to. There's also another seat, a congresswoman who took something like $5 million from COVID funding. She's going to be shown the door too. Ethics violations, and overall, with just a slight majority, the Republicans got to pass a reconciliation bill, number one. And number two, they got to find a way to fund ICE and everything else. Because right now, we're taking out of the coffers of something else in order to pay people who deserve never to have a paycheck cut off. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at the bottom of the hour. Your calls next after this short timeout. You are listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Greetings, homeowner. Repeat after me. If my home system or appliance breaks down, American Home Shield will help fix or replace the covered item, no matter its age. And exhale. Oh, and home warranty plans start at $29.99 a month. American Home Shield. Don't worry, be warranty. Visit ahs.com/listen for 20% off any plan.
See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions.
Radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's possible. It's also possible if we're not careful. Now with Swalwell dropping out, you've got their backups that are not exactly any better in the sense of being impressive alternative leaders. Katie Porter, Tom Steyer, the billionaire climate fanatic. As the president and I discussed after he endorsed me a week or so ago, they're not sending their best. But the problem is, if Swalwell's support is split between those two, they could rise, and then you could be looking at two Democrats in the top two, which is why it's all the more important that Republicans get behind the leading Republican in this race, now endorsed by the president, and that's me.
Steve Hilton is winning the Colorado race right now. If not, he's maybe by 1 point, it might be down in certain polls. But the other Republicans, Chad Bianco, and they've been atop the polls. Tom Steyer, just a billionaire. I don't know how he made his money, but nobody likes him. He has no resonance with the Democratic Party, made no progress when he ran for president. He ran for president on the policy of everything's green and I'm rich. Matt Nahan, I thought would be resonating. You look at his background as a moderate mayor from San Jose, which is a really big county. He's got all these Silicon Valley people behind him, but he can't get out of single digits. So I don't know if he's going to rise, but for some reason, they seem to be putting their money behind Tom Steyer. Katie Porter's an embarrassment of a human being, but Steyer came out and he has the endorsement of Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. Very glad to endorse my friend Tom Steyer for governor. Ro Khanna, Tom Steyer, first endorser, breaking from the old school establishment. I ran against the party machine three times to win my seat. He is running for president, no doubt about it, and he has no shot, no question about it. And we'll see. They seem to be coalescing around a guy that's not likable. So I think that Steve Hilton's got a legitimate shot. I don't know. The president's endorsement gets any of the Republicans behind him, and they say 40% of California is Republican. I know that Newsom's not doing anything for anybody right now. I don't think he cares. Here's a quote from Joe Pollack of the California Post. She says, he said, under the state's peculiar top two primary system, also known as a jungle, all of the candidates compete in a common pool. There are only two known Republicans in the race, and there's still a half dozen familiar Democrats. Worse than Stalwell's out. Worse than the disgraced congressman who led the other Democrats in some polls, will still remain in the on the primary to June 2nd. Porter, Katie Porter, and the rest have massive egos. Matt Mahan has big donors. Tom Steyer has a big pile of his own cash. Trying telling any of them to yield, they each likely will believe Swalwell's exit will help them. There's no daylight for the Democrats. It doesn't look like anyone is going to step aside. So this, to me, says that the selfishness will actually give the Republicans more of a shot, I think, anyway. So here's the full. Here is Katie Zachariah on Fox News at night last night with Trace. She's a former DHS spokesperson, Efra, and also spent some time out in California. Cut 23.
Swalwell used his position on the Intelligence and House Judiciary Committees to peddle fake information against our sitting president, two faux impeachments, Russia, 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 the raid on Mar-a-Lago, using the quote, no one is above the law. This is Eric Swalwell. He has a reckless disregard for the truth, and he put our country in jeopardy, he put the president in jeopardy, and he's put all of these innocent women in jeopardy. And Trace, no one is above the law, and he deserves everything that's coming to him. But one of the biggest problems is the Democrats were okay that he was sleeping with a Chinese spy. That should have been the first tip. He is no longer useful to the Democrats, and now they have thrown him under the proverbial bus.
That's what I find so unbelievable about Eric Swalwell. He got his name by being anti-Trump. Adam Schiff got more, you know, he was an impeachment manager. He's doing interviews, how outraged he is about Donald Trump's behavior, about Brett Kavanaugh's behavior, but all women are to be believed. But now we're not supposed to believe any of the women that came forward, although he's apologized to his family. He has dropped out of the race, suspended his campaign, even though he stays on the ballot till June 2nd, as you just heard. And he is now out of Congress. He's essentially retired, filing the paperwork. So it's a lot going on. I thought we'd be talking about, with Congress back in session, how we're going to fund the rest of the government. But we're not. We're talking about something entirely different. We're talking about a series of scandals, Congressman Gonzalez, as well as Congressman Eric Swalwell. And there's another female who's found to be stealing COVID money, and she's going to be shown the door, too, by the speaker and I think by the minority leader. When we come back, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West on that, the battle in Texas for the Senate seat, John Cornyn and Ken Paxson, as well as the latest on the Iran war. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And the way this thing is really working is phase one is the blockade itself. We're not up having a blockade of ships where the Iranian ports are. If you're coming in and your intent is a tanker to pick up Iranian oil and you come into the Arabian Sea further down in the south, that's likely where we contact you and we tell you to park your ship in the Gulf of Oman in a certain place. If you don't do that, then we're going to board your ship and make certain it's parked in that place.
So that is General Keane saying how the blockade's going to work, and it is working so far. I did get a report that there's three ships that have gone through the strait. That's better than zero. I understand that. We know that Israelis are talking to the Lebanese in New York today, refereed by Marco Rubio. We did get a report that Thursday, round two of talks with Iran will resume. We're in the middle of a 10-day ceasefire. Do you want that ceasefire to continue? I want to pose that question to Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, welcome back. Do you want a second round of talks, or do you want the ceasefire to end or continue?
Well, I think that if we know the Iranians, all they're going to do is try to buy for more time. But what they see is that they're dealing with someone that's quite different from in the Obama or the Biden administration, because he is going to continue to take action. So he has really placed them in an untenable position. So, sure, let's have talks. But if the talks don't go anywhere, there will be consequences and ramifications thereof. And right now, what we see happening, I believe the estimates from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies in Washington, D.C., is that Iran is losing somewhere between $435 to $450 million a day with this naval action that has taken place. So it would behoove them to concede, but if they don't, they're going to continue to have this economic demise and decline.
So what is your take of the fact that they said we will not enrich for 5 years, and we said 20?
No, I mean, period. It should be not enriched, period.
I know.
Because the problem, Brian, is that we have to stop having our foreign policy and national security discussions in election cycles. We have to start looking at 50 to 100 years, and that's what Iran is looking at. Remember, this has been going on for some 47 years, almost 50 years. I came on active duty a week after the Beirut Barracks bombings back in 1983. So Iran has always been a thorn in our side. It's about time that we take that thorn out and we set it afire. And so it can't be about 20 years. It has to be never again. Finished. Kaput.
I'm just stunned. And I did my open last night about this on Sunday night on One Nation, and the week before, similar, about the amount of people rooting for Iran. I mean, they literally are rooting for Iran. Whatever Trump does. So they shut down the Strait of Hormuz. It's been a disaster. We haven't achieved any of our goals. Excuse me? When's the last time you looked at a satellite photo or talked to a Pentagon official to let them know, or have the Pentagon let them know what exactly we did achieve? Do you think they're just lying when we said we hit over thousands of different sites, that we've destroyed their Navy, that we've wiped out their radar, that we've destroyed all but 100 of their missile launchers? They have about 1,000 ballistic missiles left. The damage that was done. But I want you to hear people that are really deranged, like Thomas Friedman of the New York Times. Listen to this clown, Cut 12.
I really don't want to see Bibi Netanyahu or Donald Trump politically strengthened by this war, because they are two awful human beings. They're both engaged in anti-democratic projects in their own countries. They're both alleged crooks. They are terrible, terrible people doing terrible things to America's standing in the world and Israel's standing in the world. And so I really find myself torn. I want to see Iran militarily defeated, but I do not want to see these two terrible people strengthened.
Colonel?
Well, I would say the opposite to that. I guess he was very happy with the debacle of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, where 13 Americans lost their lives. I guess he was happy with Barack Obama and the debacle where we had an ambassador that was killed in Libya, and, of course, the rise of ISIS. You know, these people are really, and truthfully, as you said, deranged, delusional, and almost borderline demonic, because they have gotten so focused on individuals that they would rather see the triumph of evil. And I think it was Sir Edmund Burke that said that all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Thomas Friedman is not a good person, and I think that's what we should deduce from the statement and the clip that you just played. But that is the mantra of the progressive socialists, the Marxist left. That's who they are. They hate a person, so therefore they want to see the decline of our country. They don't want to see our country doing well. No, by the way, where was Thomas Friedman when Joe Biden was censoring Americans from their free speech during the whole COVID debacle.
Oh, yeah. By the way, he was best friends with Joe Biden. He was in there telling him he could be as big as FDR. Remember? That was him.
Yeah.
Right. Him and John Meacham were telling him you could be an historic figure, Joe Biden, if you could remember your name and were able to make more than a 7-minute speech without fumbling over yourself or remember what the Constitution sounded like. Here's Hillary Clinton. Cut 13.
We're in a situation now where we are weak, where we essentially have lost the leverage and initiative that we had. I worry that the United States is now in a very weak position vis-a-vis Iran, which should be the outlier, should be on the back foot, and should be the one held to account.
I mean, do you think she believes what she's saying?
Well, yes, they do believe because they're in an echo chamber and the person that she's talking to is not going to challenge her and say, well, you know, your husband faced terrorist attacks from Osama bin Laden and he blew up a milk factory. Your husband denied United States Army Special Operators, Delta Force or Rangers, armor support and C-130 gunship support. And how many of them died in Mogadishu? You really believe that America is a weaker position? So, yeah, they can say these things because no one is there like you. She wouldn't say that in front of you because you'd come back with a nuclear attack on her head. Figuratively speaking, not literal, to challenge those assertions.
Look, they have shown Iran that they had much more there's much more weaponry than anybody thought. Number two is they changed the way they fight. They looked at the decapitation of Saddam Hussein in 2003, and by 2008, they have changed to a mosaic defense. And the way I understand it, but you're the expert, is they have 32 different provinces with 32 ways of defending and fighting. This way, if they lost communication, if they lost their Ayatollah, if they lost their leader, which everything happened, lost 30 or 40 or 50 of their leaders, some say 80 of their leaders, they knew how to act. They're going to keep throwing rockets, go into the Gulf states, look for American assets. It wasn't going to stop. So that whole mosaic defense could also reveal that they have no idea how bad things actually are because they don't even know and don't have any central source of communication. Harder to kill, but also harder for them to survive.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're talking about decentralized operations, but in those decentralized operations, that you don't have that centralized command and control structure and network, so they can't communicate with each other. And then the other thing is that we're not looking to invade their country. What we're doing is we're looking to degrade a military capability and capacity, which we have done. That is not debatable. That does not allow them to hold that entire region hostage. Now, I think what Donald Trump is realizing, the number one thing that you can do to the Iranian regime, those people in charge, is to cut them off from the flow of revenue. And that primary flow of revenue for them is oil and gas. And that also sends a message to a country like China. And don't forget, in a month, Xi Jinping and Donald Trump are going to sit down at a table across from each other. Wouldn't it be absolutely incredible if Xi Jinping is put into a position where he has to get Donald Trump's permission to have oil and natural gas flowing to his country? Because we've already separated China from Venezuela. So any of these chuckleheads that can't understand the geopolitical strategy here, it is only because they have Trump derangement syndrome.
I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but I do want to play what was on 60 Minutes on Sunday. And those are these cardinals, these left-wing cardinals, sat down. For some reason, 60 Minutes thought it was a good idea to get the perspective of the Catholic Church on a war in Iran. They didn't bring up the 1,500 that were hung this year, or the 19-year-old wrestler that was killed because he showed up on the street to protest. They didn't think to bring up the 31 to 41,000 people killed in cold blood because they wanted water and some freedom in Iran, or the 600 Americans that were killed. They just brought up the fact that Donald Trump started a war of choice in Nora O'Donnell's view. Listen to these cardinals, cut 38.
Would you like to see this first American pope be more outspoken on issues that he disagrees with?
He's the pastor of the world. He's not a pundit. So the distinction is he's not going to pronounce on everything, but he's going to pronounce on what's important.
Iran has been the chief exporter of terror. Is there no scenario in which preventing that can be a just war?
It's an abominable regime, and it should be removed. But this is a war of choice that we went to, and I think it's embedded in a wider moment in the United States that's worrying, which is this. We're seeing before us the possibility of war after war after war.
So he said they should be removed. How do we expect to remove them? With a vote? How do you expect to remove them? With a stern letter?
No, you ask them nicely. You know, maybe the pontiff will say, will you please stop killing people? Will you please stop being the number one sponsor of Islamic terrorism in the world? Look, gone are the days when you had Pope Urban II, who in 1095 said, enough of Christians being killed as they are going on pilgrimage to Jerusalem. We're going to do something about it. Gone are the days when you don't have the Holy League, who dispatched the naval fleet in 1571 to defeat an invading Muslim army, Ottoman army, at the Battle of Lepanto. Now these people just want to, you know, talk sternly against Western civilization. You know, look at what is going on in the UK. Look at what is going on in France. Look at what is going on all across Western Europe. I am sick and tired of these people that want to be apologists for evil and always try to point their finger back at the ones who are standing up and doing something about it. So I would say that these priests and these popes and bishops, just focus on what you're supposed to be doing, bringing people toward the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And oh, by the way, on Palm Sunday, almost 30 Christian Nigerians were killed by Boko Haram, a Muslim terrorist organization. I didn't hear the Pope or
I didn't know that.
Anything about that.
I missed that. Can you say that again?
25 to 30 Nigerian Christians were killed on Palm Sunday this year by Boko Haram, Muslim extremists there and terrorists there in Nigeria. I did not hear the Pope or the bishop say a word about that.
Not a word. You would think that they care about Christians in Africa. You know, you would think that you would think that a Pope would see the positives in America where he was born. And this president's not going to take a backward step. People got upset at him yesterday. I don't love the picture that he put up. I didn't see it at the time, but okay, took it down. But the other thing is, just understand, this guy says it's a war of choice. He's not afraid of Donald Trump. I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. Where'd that come from? What do you think that America is the problem? He's upset about Venezuela. Is he upset that hundreds of political prisoners are now released from prison? That people can walk the streets in Venezuela? They're probably 6 months from a democratic election. What planet is he on?
Yeah, and don't forget that people in Venezuela were starving so bad that they had to go to the zoo and they were killing animals, or the colectivos of Maduro who were going around gunning people on the streets, gunning them down. So these are misplaced priorities. And what you really have happening is this cultural Marxism that has invaded even the church. And I think that we are seeing that. And, you know, hopefully folks will realize this and say, hey, look, you know, Pope, bishops, this is not your place. And again, you should be talking about, thus saith the Lord, bringing people toward Jesus Christ, talking about people's souls. But there comes a time that you have to stand up and face evil, just like Pope Urban II did in 1095.
I will bring up one other example. Where was the Catholic Church during World War II? How come they revealed the papers that said they didn't? They knew about the Nazis, the extermination of 6 million Jews, and did nothing.
Yeah.
They had Mussolini in their midst, and they had Hitler across the way. And this Pope says, in war, God doesn't take a position. Okay, Battle of the Bulge. Yeah. Are you pulling for the Nazis? All right? I'm not saying that I know, but I do know good and evil. And I'm pretty sure we're on the side of good.
Yeah, and never forget the prayer of Patton's chaplain, which is immortalized at the chaplain school there in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, when he wrote that letter that prayed, it offered up for the ability to defeat that enemy, that evil that we're up against, Nazism. So you're absolutely right. I mean, God is on the side of good, but woe be to those. This is Isaiah 5:20. Woe be to those who call good evil and evil good, who exchange light for darkness and darkness for light. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people doing that.
Right. And if you're Joe Biden and you're a Democrat, go see the Pope. He loves you, even though you're pro-choice and everything about the Catholic Church is pro-life. So you would think he'd say you're letting down the Catholic religion. Instead, he said, come one, come all. So good luck with that. I don't know.
And don't forget, Brian, it was in the Biden administration with Merrick Garland that they sent the FBI after Catholic churches.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's true. That just came out of the last couple of days. Colonel Alan West, interesting times. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sir. God bless. Take care, Brian.
You got it. The one thing I disagree with Vice President Vance, he goes, I don't really think it's a big news story. The Pope, really? When the Pope is critical of the President of the United States, I'm pretty sure on anybody's map, on anybody's punch list, that's the number one story. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The fact that he's able to do that, and members of his party and his MAGA base continue to explain and apologize for him or rationalize what he's doing, is just so, so troubling and worrisome that this person who clearly is unhinged and who I think the 25th Amendment was written with Donald Trump's in mind, because allowing someone like this to continue to be the commander in chief and to control the tremendous capabilities of the U.S. military, including our nuclear weapons capability, which he seemed to allude to when he said he's going to just eliminate an entire civilization. Again, we really are in very, very troubling times.
That's a guy who the walls are closing in, and we have Todd Blanche on a different hour today. I'm going to ask him about where the investigation is, FBI looking into the fact that he lied under oath and what he was up to with the Russia investigation. This guy is at the hub of all of it. So John Brennan still gets a contract from MSNBC and calls for the 25th Amendment. You idiot. There's not one person on the president's staff and thinks he deserves the 25th Amendment. The guy works 20 hours a day. He's handling multiple things at the same time. More industrious than any other president, willing to take on the hard positions. You might not agree. That's part of politics. And of course, he thinks you are absolutely awful and wants to make sure that, and you think he's awful. But for him to continue to get a forum to spout his negativity and his inaccuracy is crazy. I don't get it. Just like the guys that got these other contracts, part of the Russia hoax, who get their contracts and stay on the air. So John Brennan should be embarrassed. He's going to be indicted soon and exposed, I hope. They got to put stronger cases than they put together with James Comey and stronger cases than they put together with Tisha James. I got it. But this guy has been problematic. People inside the CIA know he was a clown, and he continues to back that up. And when the Democrats going to get over the fact that Donald Trump is back and he's going to finish all 4 years? You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out how to see me live, especially May 30th in Reno, Nevada. Don't move.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, coming here from Midtown Manhattan, where we're about to get a city-run grocery store for just $30 million. That's this genius socialist who celebrated 100 days with that big announcement, as if that's good news. This hour, we're going to be joined by Andy Stump, former Navy SEAL, veteran podcaster, and author of the new book, Drown Proof. We'll do a simulcast on Stuart Varney's show. That'll be great. We share audiences. And Senator John Cornyn is sticking around. He's going to be with us shortly. He's got a big primary coming up. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
So I think what you're going to see, actually, is a consolidation on the Democrat side. I think that Swalwell support will be split between those two very unattractive options, Katie Porter and Tom Steyer.
Tom Steyer and Katie Porter. Can you believe it? The governor's race might just be flipping that very blue state red. We'll discuss it.
Number two.
But the decision by both Swalwell and Gonzalez to step aside means that Speaker Mike Johnson's razor-thin majority will stay razor-thin. He can only afford to lose one Republican on any party line vote.
That is Manu Raju of CNN talking about corruption in Congress as two high-profile lawmakers head for the ethical exits, what it means for the balance of power, and will they ever get their act together and fund the DHS?
Number one.
Right now we have a blockade. They're doing no business. I didn't like seeing boats come out if they were doing business with Iran, but if they weren't, no boats came out. So now Iran is doing absolutely no business, and we're going to keep it that way very easily.
That is the President of the United States talking about the blockades in place, pressure on the talks. On talks are on the horizon. There might even be on Thursday as the world watches and even the Pope deals himself in. we have the latest. Senator John Cornyn joins us now. Senator, great to see you, and thanks for going on Zoom for us. Senator, do you believe the blockade was the right move for the president off the Strait of Hormuz?
Absolutely. The president has shown remarkable courage, political and otherwise, in taking on a threat that everybody knew, including previous presidents, was unacceptable, which is the potential for a nuclear Iran. And obviously, they've had American blood on their hands ever since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, killing our soldiers in the Middle East, and obviously wanting to wipe Israel off the map and threaten American interests in that region. The president's using this maximum pressure campaign, and there's no more pressure on Iran than denying them the revenue from the oil that they use to pay for their wars.
So Mark Penn posts on this, as you know, a Democratic strategist. He compares Trump's approach to John F. Kennedy. He said that Bush tried to do troop deployments with Iraq. Obama tried concessions with his JCPOA deal. And he believes that this quarantine worked for Kennedy and can work for Trump. It does put pressure on the entire world, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Fortunately, we're producing more oil and gas in America than we ever have before. That's helping, but this is a global commodity, and obviously it's impacting prices. And as inconvenient as it is, and it's a hardship in some cases, it's a small price to pay, I believe, in the long run, to defang the preeminent threat in the Middle East.
If they ask for a supplemental, what do you think they're going to ask for, and would you be on board?
Well, we've heard a lot of numbers mentioned. The most recent, somewhere under $100 billion. That's real money. But unfortunately, this preemptive effort to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon is costing money. But I think in the long run will be a huge financial savings. And yes, I support what it's needed to fund this effort. I just have to stand in awe of our United States military, and of course, working with our allies in the Middle East. It's just, it's an amazing thing to watch. And of course, we know President Xi and President Putin are watching too, to see that the United States military is the most powerful military in the world. And that itself has a deterrent effect.
So now that you guys you're back in town and you're trying to get something done to fund DHS, we know you got a big primary coming up on May 26th, a runoff with Ken Paxton, the AG, the winner of which will go to take on a Democrat. That usually it's a walk. You win the primary, you win. But this will be a tough fight the whole way. So when you see some of the ethical problems with Eric Swalwell, are you surprised?
No, I'm not. You know, Democrats tend to ignore ethical problems of their own in their own party. And this is a danger for Republicans, too, because if Republicans don't police our own party and hold our elected officials accountable in this primary runoff, then this is going to be the beginning of the end for the Republican Party dominance in Texas. We haven't elected a Democrat since 1994 in Texas statewide. But this would provide the first real opportunity and, of course, divert essential resources that could be used better to pick up Senate seats in other parts of the country.
So you're saying that Ken, so you're talking about Tony Gonzalez is resigning. He says, that's it, I'm done. As you know, it looks like he had an affair with somebody in his office who sadly and tragically burned herself alive. He wrote yesterday, there is a reason for everything and God has a plan for us all. When Congress returns, I will file my retirement from office. You believe that was the right move?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I think, again, you know, Congress isn't really held in high esteem by the American people anyway. And this just provides fodder for the negativity directed at Congress. I mean, we have our challenges, but we are representing the American people, and this is how we govern ourselves.
So which you're also referring to, Eric Swalwell, he's somebody, there's a press conference today of a woman accuser. This guy not only is not going to run for governor, not only has to resign from Congress, I think he's going to do the best he can to stay out of jail. That's where that's going. But, Senator, when you talk about scandal, you were also talking about the guy you're running against, Ken Paxton, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. His record is well known in Texas, and we're making sure that it's known more. unfortunately, Ken is so arrogant that he thinks all of this scandal is sort of baked in the cake and that his supporters don't care. Well, the truth is a lot of people hadn't heard about it. But this is not just about anti-Ken Paxton. I'm proud of the work I've done to help President Trump secure the border and supported the president overwhelmingly, 99.3% of the time, his policies. So we don't need to risk a loss to a Democrat in November with James Tallarico, who's very dangerous because he'll raise money nationally. He'll be well-funded, and this would be the best opportunity Democrats have had in many, many years to pick up a Senate seat. We can't let that happen.
So I see a poll from Qantas has you down five. Another poll has you down five as well over in, for the primary that's coming up on the 26th. How do you close that gap, or do you believe these polls are accurate?
You know, polls and particularly runoffs are very hard to do accurately because you just don't know how many people will show up. We had 11% of Republican primary voters show up in the March 3rd primary. And as you know, I came out number one out of three in that race, I think surprising quite a few people. But we're working hard to encourage all of the Republican primary voters and people who didn't vote in the primary to turn out on May the 26th. That's how you win elections. You get more votes than the opponent. And but we need people to participate, people who care about not only the future of the nation, but the future of Texas and the future of the Republican Party. So we're encouraging as many people as we can touch to vote on May the 26th, if not early.
So, Senator, just getting down to fully funding DHS, you guys said, okay, let's fund everything except for ICE. Can't get them to agree. Then do in a reconciliation package, finish the job. Here's a guy you know well from Texas, Congressman Jody Arrington, who was in our studio yesterday. Cut 43.
I see a few paths that we could take. I think the first and most important thing is get Homeland Security funded. Mm-hmm. Stop this nonsense. Take the keys away from the kids, the Democrats, who are constantly obstructing, have no interest in governing, and would rather imperil our country by turning off basically these critical Homeland Security operations in conflict. As long as it helped their prospects in November. Okay, let's move on from that. We've got to be the adults. We can use reconciliation to do it. We can either do it in part or in whole, either the whole Homeland Security Agency, or we can just do ICE and CBP. We can do it for multiple years. Mm-hmm. Take the leverage away from them in future fights. Let's learn from this disastrous shutdown, startup shutdown, and all their reneging.
So I'm not sure if the House has made it clear their direction. What do you think is going to happen? Was the Senate going to do anything different? You just basically handed off and said, we'll fund it separately.
Yeah, I support the effort to do reconciliation. I agree with Jody. The Democrats simply are resisting any rational effort to try to govern and fund the government, including the Department of Homeland Security, at a time of heightened danger because of what's happening in the Middle East. And we've seen a number of domestic terrorist attacks here motivated by what's happening overseas. So, the good news is, Brian, we in this anticipated Democrats would misbehave when it came to funding for ICE. And we pre-funded in the Working Family Tax Cuts Act ICE for a number of years. But I support the effort to go back and to plus that up to make sure that these ridiculous and dangerous games aren't rewarded.
So there's a lot of people on the right. There's some people on the right that are way to the right. They're segregationists, the pro-Nazi. One of these guys, I'm not even going to mention his name, loves Stalin, and yet he's got a ton of followers. The left has him too. One of which is a lot of people have trouble on the left walking away from Hassan Piker. Listen to this exchange, cut 47.
I want to stay in the theme of violence just for a minute, because I think it connects to another comment of yours that's been circulating. This is one from January. Hamas is 1,000 times better than the fascist, settler, colonial, apartheid state of Israel.
I stand by that.
Well, so I will say this is the one that bothered me most when I first heard it. And I remember having a reaction to it when I first saw it in January.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think even if you believe what happened in Gaza is genocide and what's happening in the West Bank is apartheid,
mm-hmm.
those are different claims from Hamas is 1,000 times better, because like Hamas is an organization that has massacred, raped, kidnapped civilians on October 7th. They've also been catastrophic for Palestinians by almost every measure. Governance, corruption, they made choices they knew would result in mass civilian deaths of their own people. So my question is, when you say Hamas is 1,000 times better, do you actually mean that? Or is that a rhetorical move or like a solidarity signal? Like what?
I mean, it's all of the above. I do mean it.
That is really where Democrats stand. They are anti-Israel. AOC, we should give them zero funding. AIPAC cannot have a role for Democrats. There used to be a time where parties would battle to show who was more loyal to Israel. What happened, Senator Cornyn?
Well, it's in the best interest of our nation to have a democratic ally in the Middle East, a nation that is surrounded by a very dangerous neighborhood, which has been trying to wipe them off the map. So I'm proud of my support for our ally in Israel. I believe it's good for the United States. But I think, unfortunately, Brian, this gets back to what we were talking about earlier. When you have only 11% of the primary voters vote in the Republican primary, you had 12% in the Democratic primary. That leaves 75% of voters, the mainstream of America, not represented in that process. So we need to police our own through this primary and through this runoff process to eliminate the corrupt officials, to eliminate the radical fringes on the right and on the left, and elect responsible people who actually want to govern and want what's best for the country.
But you have people that will appear with them because they have a lot of followers. It's just nuts.
Social media, I think, distorts all of our perception because it looks like they're louder and they're more popular than they really are. But it's always the most outrageous messages that get the most attention. But the way we combat that and the way we bring our country back into the sensible position is to more people to participate in the process. I think 11% of voters voted in New York City for Mayor Mondani. 11%. If the rest of the registered voters had voted, do you think there'd be a different outcome?
I hope so. Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah, I mean, but we would have been stuck with Cuomo, who's got huge problems on his own. I know. You'd be much better off in Texas. Senator Cornyn, if people want to help you win this primary, where do they go?
JohnCornyn.com.
Very simple. Senator, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Brian. Thank you so much.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on The Brian Kilmeade Show. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The Cardinals, Archbishops, they do not necessarily represent the Pope. They do not even represent the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. These are very liberal cardinals, very important people in the Catholic Church in the United States, but very liberal membership of the leadership of bishops in the United States.
And that is Father Jonathan, no longer in the priesthood, but still very connected to the church. And I think he helps out with the Catholic Channel on XM Sirius, weighing in on these Catholic Cardinals, obviously Catholic Cardinals, not the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team, the Cardinals who were from Chicago, but serving in Chicago. One guy's actually from Newark, New Jersey, I saw, and just went on record basically ripping Donald Trump on 60 Minutes. I'm thinking to myself, I thought Barry Weiss was going to work on CBS and trying to get 60 Minutes, a respected magazine show, the most successful in history, to be a little bit more balanced. What happened there? Norm O'Donnell sitting down with three of the people and getting comments from the Pope, making it clear, I'm not afraid of Donald Trump. Is it war of choice? Condemn the Venezuela war? Just a great point the Lieutenant Colonel Alan West brought up to me, and he just sent me the story. I did not see this. Where is the condemnation in Nigeria of all the massacre of these Christians? In fact, I just got this. He sent this over to me a short time ago, and it essentially just talked about the 30 Christians that were massacred on Palm Sunday. Where's that outrage? And guess who bombed the Nigerian government who was going out to kidnap Christians and kill them? It was Donald Trump. Not that he loves war. He didn't want to see innocent people massacred by terrorists. Call him crazy. So he's going to call it out. He's not going to say, well, it's a pope. I better worry about 1.4 billion Catholics. He's like, no, I know what I'm doing. I'm not starting a war. The guy that starts a war is Vladimir Putin. That's starting a war. This is not starting a war. This is a war that never stopped. This is a country that takes the little money that they earn, finances terror groups to try to push forward extreme Shia Islam, as well as make sure Hezbollah and Hamas make life miserable for the only Jewish state in the world. So that's the people that you condemn. Not Iran, the U.S. It is crazy. And if they told me, with a little research, could I find out if these cardinals are liberal or not? Never thought it mattered, but obviously it does. Can we get a balance? But just so you know, for any people who don't know, Cardinal Dolan is got this unbelievable personality in the number one church, St. Patrick's Church. He put his papers in to resign because he hit a certain age. Usually they don't. The popes don't accept that because he's in the prime of his life and hitting his stride. This pope accepted it. Why? I think it's because he went to Trump's inaugural.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Right now we have a blockade. They're doing no business. I didn't like seeing boats come out if they were doing business with Iran, but if they weren't, no boats came out. So now Iran is doing absolutely no business, and we're going to keep it that way very easily. Don't forget, their Navy is gone, their Air Force is gone, their anti-aircraft is gone, their radar is gone, and their leaders are gone. That's a lot.
So there you go. The President of the United States doing the ultimate move. I think he just got turned everything around and flipped the script on the Iranians. While in 21-hour talks, first he sends a destroyer through the strait to sweep for mines, to show everybody two ships went through. It's okay. And then he says, you can't shut down the strait. I'm blockading the strait. And now no Iranian ships have moved in and out. They had three come through, not Iranian. Andy Stumpf joins us now, former Navy SEAL, veteran podcaster, and author of a brand new book as of today called Drown Proof, 8 Life Lessons to Keep Your Head Above Water. Andy, welcome.
Thank you for having me on again. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to see you. And we're streaming too. I know you have a very successful podcast. First off, on what the president said. Do you like these moves over the weekend?
I can't claim, given my old job in the military, I understand the concept of a blockade. I can't say I've ever participated in one. I think at that point we have limited options. I mean, there's going to have to be actions that are going to need to be taken to drive this to its reasonable end. And I think that we are working our way through those available options, from maybe least kinetic with a blockade perspective and working our way forward, which I like to see. Like, let's graduate and respond accordingly to that. So whether or not it's going to work, I don't know, because I don't know much about blockades, but I like where we're starting.
But when ships are coming through and they're saying if you want to get through, it's going to cost you $2 million,
yep.
That's a bit of a problem. So you can't allow a terroristic nation to profit off war.
Not unless you want them to continue doing what they have previously been doing, correct?
Right. So where do you think this is going?
I think you would agree that's the million-dollar question right now. I don't know. I like the shift in direction where people are actually talking as opposed to battling it out kinetically, because innocent people can get involved in that. I like the idea of coming to a table and working something out. I think it's going to head in that direction, because if the blockade is effective, I don't know how long Iran is going to be able to survive.
I want you to hear what General Jack Keane said about the strategy. Cut 8.
I think we're watching a complete reversal here by President Trump and his team. We saw the Iranians, when they seized the Straits of Hormuz, that enabled them to shut the war down and go to a ceasefire. And now we've seen President Trump move from kinetic warfare to economic warfare.
Because nothing gets through.
I mean, I like it. Again, of available options, we have, I wouldn't say we've exhausted kinetic options, but we have really diminish their military capability. Mm-hmm. And now let's look at another step economically where we can take an attack at that as well too, and then hopefully drive them to the negotiating
table.
So
what would it take, from what you know and from the the bunker busters that dropped to get out the roughly 1,000 pounds of uranium out of the ground. That's something to do in the middle of a war zone. That's tough, right?
Yeah. You know, that there was, we'll call it a conspiracy, that the combat search and rescue operation for the downed F-15 weapons safety officer was a ruse for going into one of those facilities and getting that out. And first off, they did that in the middle of the day, which you wouldn't do if you were going to send in an element to do that to begin with from a tactical perspective. It would take an incredible amount of time and equipment available to do that. And all of those people would have to be in the, it's called MOP gear, or mission oriented protective posture, for chemical and radiological exposure. We're talking an undertake. And then not only do you have to be in that stuff when you are handling that type of material, when you have to be able to get out of that equipment safely as well too. So there's a whole procedure to get in that equipment, let alone do the operation, leave the area, and then decontaminate yourself as well. It would be, we trained to do that, and I would say of all the things they would have potentially asked us to do, that was probably the least favorite or wanted operation.
You trained to do that?
So one of the JSOC missions is to go and essentially prosecute WMD targets, and that would fall into the weapons of mass destruction target or materials associated with that. And it's part of the mission set for both CAG and Ford Development Group. I'm not going to say we practice for it often because, again, of the complexity. So you might have 40 to 50 guys who could go in and do that, but you're talking hundreds, if not thousands, of support people that would have to be in place to make that whole thing happen. It would be an absolute nightmare.
So when you're training as a Navy SEAL, do they say, hey, listen, these are some of our enemies. Sure, you know about it. Took social studies in 11th grade. Iran. Mm-hmm. This is how we're approached. Have people been talking about Iran? This is Iraq. This is Afghanistan. This is how we get Al-Qaeda. This is what we're... Do they talk about hotspots, or they just talk about mission, the mission or the objective? Or do they talk about countries and challenges?
It's a combination of both. The mission sets that you train for have broad applicability across theaters of war. And for those not familiar, I mean, Iran sits right in between Iraq and Afghanistan. So the U.S. is familiar with operations in those environment. But the generalized training that you do, you then turn that generalized training and you can specify it once you, for example, a WMD target. If you were to identify that, you would have your general level of training, and then you would orient towards specific training for that in the time leading up to it if you had intelligence driving you in that direction. So you just take that general template and kind of just sharpen the razor blade before you go and execute something like that.
All right. So when you first off, the transition you made from Navy SEAL to podcaster, commentator, where you're at now.
Yeah.
Describe that process.
Psychotic would probably be, chaotic would be the best example.
But from chaotic to normalcy, like when you walk in the regular world, did you have trouble adjusting?
I was shot on a target in Iraq in 2005 and spent about a year rehabbing. And during that time period, it forced me to think about what was going to happen after the military.
And how old are you at this time?
It was 2005. I was born in 77, so 28 years old, at a command that I wanted to be at, operating at the level that I wanted to be at, laying in a hospital bed, wondering, am I going to be able to keep doing this? And I had never asked myself that question before that day. Mm-hmm. And it helped me. I used to describe that as the worst experience of my life. And now it's probably something that I'm the most grateful for, because it allowed me to lift my head up. And I knew that the end of my military service was going to come at some point in time. So I started thinking about that and planning for that. Leaving the military, though, so I knew that was coming and I had a good off ramp, but then everything changed. And if you had given me a day to write down all the things that I was going to do when I left the military, I don't do any of those now. And all of the things that I've kind of fallen into because of the chaotic choices put in front of me, they wouldn't have been on that list. And that's where the chaos comes from.
Wow, that's so interesting. It's almost like you're describing what an athlete goes through.
Probably.
Because, right? 30, 32 years old, you feel like you're in the prime of your life, but you know if you're a football player, you're already on borrowed time.
It's really dangerous to be defined by what you do for a living. And I always tried to remind myself that this is what I do. This isn't who I am. And that's easy to say now in the rearview mirror looking backwards, but that community is revered in many respects. And it opens doors for you. So it's hard not to constantly feel that tug of quite frankly.
But that's never going away, what you did.
It's a constant battle, but it's not all I ever want to be known for too, right? So for the rest of my life, I'd be like, Andy Stump, former Navy SEAL, which I couldn't be prouder of. But it's like, I've also done some other things as well too. And that's the challenge. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't change it. And it's the battle that I get to, an incredibly fortunate burden that I get to carry with me and then kind of battle that for the rest of my life. I enjoy it.
I remember Jim Brown, I did a show with him for a while, and he said, when people come up to him, oh, you're the running back. He's like, I've been an activist for 50 years. He goes, yeah, I've been working with prisoners.
Yeah, but that touchdown.
The founder of American. He goes, he was in the 70s, and he's like, people talk about, I haven't done that since I was 29.
Yeah.
But let's talk about this book. When did you realize some of the things you learned as a Navy SEAL can help the everyday people? Because that's what you have, 8 life lessons to keep your head above water.
Yeah, I resisted writing a book for years because I served with people that I thought were my heroes. I am still in awe of the community that I came from, and I didn't think I had anything to offer the volume of work that had already been put out. I have never been on a mission that is going to be breaking news, but I've been around and worked with people who have done many of those things. It's like, how could I possibly compare? But after enough nudging from family and friends and coworkers, I realized, and the most common thing people will say after military service is, you know, those experiences, they must be so amazing. And the lessons that you learned and the tools you have, I wish I could have those. And I realized statistically, most people will never have access to the vehicle with which I learned those lessons, but they apply in every aspect of your life. So I finally realized after that prodding from people very close to me, my goal, what I really want to do for the rest of my life is to try to make a positive impact. So my goal with the book was to try to take 17 years of those lessons and tools that work in the absolute pressure cooker environments and show people that they have broad applicability in personal and professional life. And it can really change the trajectory of your life if you can embrace some of those principles and philosophies.
Wow. So that's why you put this together. By the way, yeah, for a little book, this weighs a lot. You have a lot of pictures in here.
Well, you know, we added a little bit of weight to the inside cover, a little bit of lead there, you know. So.
It doesn't seem like that, I'm serious. No, it looks great, Andy. Andy Stumpf has written the book. He's a former Navy SEAL and now successful podcaster, broadcaster. Downproof is the name of it. 8 life lessons to keep your head above water, out today. Go grab it. It's a perfect Mother's Day gift, I think, too, leading to Father's Day.
It's a perfect gift to anybody who is alive and who is dealing with challenges in their life. So welcome to the club.
How to get through it, too. Yeah. Everyone's got challenges. Thanks so much,
of
Andy.
Course,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
The Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. In a couple of minutes, I'm going to do Stuart Varney. We're going to do a simulcast on FBN, the fastest growing cable network in the country. And then I'll be able to squeeze in some calls, or you can write me on email, briankilmeade.com. Keep in mind, too, got a series of events coming up, including May 30th and July 11th. History, Liberty, and Laughs that bring history to life on stage. It's going to be entertaining, interesting. Most of all, I get a chance to meet you in person. Streamed on Fox Nation, briankilmeade.com. Then I got a host of events coming up in the fall. Well, let's listen in.
Here we go. It's coming up on 10:51. That means it's Kilmeade time, and there he is on your screens right now. All right, Brian, Eric Swalwell resigned from Congress. He's leaving the California gubernatorial race over misconduct allegations. A New York Times piece says Swalwell's fall, quote, punctuates woes of Democrats in California of all places. Brian, where does this leave the Democrats in California now?
I think they're in a lot of trouble. Katie Porter, the most unlikable woman on the planet, who came out with those horrible things, the way she treats staffers and her attitude, she's basically done. You have a very impressive mayor in San Jose, Matt Mahan. This guy looks great on paper, and he's got all this support from Silicon Valley, but he can't get out of single digits. And you have Tom Steyer. He's got two things. He's got billions of dollars, and he's a green maniac. Everything's about green energy for this guy. He's got no Democratic friends, but it seems now they're rallying around him to stop the two Republicans for winning the juggling primary. One thing is clear. Steve Hilton's going to get through, and then it's going to be, will the other Republican, the sheriff, be able to get through as well? But in terms of somebody, Gavin Newsom's hands off, and Nancy Pelosi, you have Adam Schiff, they were behind Eric Swalwell despite his questionable background. And I guess these dicey relationships that is seemingly everyone on the inside knew about, but no one seemed to care about until it got exposed. Eric Swalwell, for example, this guy is not only out of the race, he's out of Congress, and now he's got to keep himself out of jail. Press conference today might be his body blow.
Good Lord. Brian, Trump tipped a DoorDash driver $100 from McDonald's delivery at the Oval Office. This was to promote no taxes on tips. It's great stuff. Watch this.
Are the White House good tippers? Do you know?
Wait.
Potentially. Yes, very.
Mr. President, can I ask you something?
That's your, thank you. You reminded me.
Well, I want to thank you.
Thank you very
for
much.
The no tax on tips.
Oh, that's good.
It has helped my family out immensely, and I definitely appreciate it.
Thank that's you. So nice. You know, the one thing that I, just in leaving, we've had more good press for change, having to do with the fact that people are receiving more money from their tax refunds than they ever thought possible. And it's because of the great big beautiful bill.
You know, Brian, Trump relates to people very well. I think it works politically. How about you?
I love the optics. That's called a press operation that works. Because you know the president does like McDonald's. It's sincere. Number two is he does care about service workers. If anyone's ever seen him at one of his clubs, he knows the waiters' names. I went to Atlantic City on casinos that he used to own. And there's still people saying for generations he remembered their birthdays. So when this grandmom shows up and was a guest on our show today on Fox and Friends, shows up. She made $11,000 last year in tips, and she paid no taxes on it.
Yeah.
And got $100 from the president. So this really does affect people. And if you know people in the service industry, they're grinders, right? Because you know if you're doing a good job, you can make a little bit more money. And you go in, you've got to be personable at the same time.
I don't know any other president in my lifetime who could relate to people on that normal, everyday level like Donald Trump. He's the winner in that category. But last 30 seconds to you, Brian.
I would say, Stuart Varney, I've seen you in a restaurant. As much as high as you have gotten in this industry, you are also very nice to waiters and waitresses and people that serve you. That's pretty clear. Number three is, it's amazing what the president's saying. Yeah, I could run a war. Yep, I'm going to try to run the economy. I'm going to go to a UFC fight. And I'm also going to tell you about the big, beautiful bill a little bit later next week. This week coming up, he's going to be doing a few appearances, going to Turning Point USA. And he's going to be talking about the economy. He could do multiple things at one time like nobody I've ever seen. He is, whether you voted for him or not, he has put the bar up so high for productivity as a president. Because even if you saw the backdrop of the Oval Office, he's got names for each building now in the Oval Office. So he's totally revamped it while building a ballroom and maybe an archway. This guy does not stop.
I'm a big tipper, by the way. That's why I'm
fairly
popular. All right, Brian, thanks a lot. We'll see
you later. Go get him, Stuart. Thank you. And by the way, I'm going to be coming up on Outnumbered shortly, so that'll be another chance to see you out there. So I'll be on the channel shortly in the middle seat with some fine people. But the president's talking about the tax on tips. And right now, we would be talking a lot about that. We'd be talking about gas roughly $2.80 and people getting their tax returns. And that's why I respect what the president's doing right now more than ever. Because what he did is, I got to deal with this problem. I got to deal with it when it has to be dealt with, not when I want to deal with it. He's not going to say, I'm going to see if they're going to be weaponizing and rebuilding their nuclear program. I'm going to watch them put tents over the holes I blew open with bunker busters. I'm going to see them massacre their own people. But I got an election coming up. I'll handle it in November. No, he says I'm handling it now. And when people say you're backing off, it's not going well, he doesn't agree with them. And by the way, that's factually not right. And he said, I will show you. Now, I don't need a deal. I will walk away from the deal. I want everything for this deal. So he's saying, I don't want 5 years of no enrichment. Remember, the JCPOA says you can enrich up to 2%, well, 1.8%, but you're still enriching. We know they're cheating. Number two, the JCPOA says in 10 years, you could do whatever you want. The president says, no, there's going to be no duration on what I'm going to be able to do on your enriching. You can never enrich. Number two, open up the strait. Number three, that can never happen again. And number four, I don't think you can have ballistic missiles. Maybe short-range missiles. I don't even think you could have that. Blowing up their iron, going for all these other things, oil and gas. And in return, you get to unfreeze some of their sanctions and some of their frozen funds. I'm for that. But you have guaranteed enrichment, and we have to be part of the inspection team. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. The Brian Kilmeade Show is proud to have the acting attorney general in studio, Todd Blanche. A little bit later, we have some fun with the fastest growing sport in the country, Real American Freestyle. It's going to have a big event over the weekend. Chad Bronstein is going to be with us and Kyle Drake. And of course, there's a huge UFC fight. And a lot of UFC is competing in the wrestling over at the White House coming up pretty quick to celebrate America 250. Todd Blanche, well, congratulations on the elevation, at least for now, as from deputy to acting. What's the big difference in your job?
Well, I'm 4 days in, so 5 days in, so tough to tell. But look, I had a great relationship with Pam. We worked well together. She's a friend. And so it's sad to not have her around.
Right.
She's a good person to have around. The big difference right now is just trying to get the department moving forward. We have a limited amount of time to do a lot of work and making sure we're firing on all cylinders. So it's a full-time job before, it's a full-time job now.
Right. So did you get a deputy?
So we have someone who's performing like an acting deputy role. It was Colin McDonald, who's the newly appointed assistant attorney general for the new fraud task force.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's helping run things. We have a great staff. You know, we are not lacking for great people in the AG's office or in the deputy attorney general's office.
Personal question.
Sure.
I watched you 2 years ago in court every day, right here in New York City.
Yep.
And I saw your face every single day, and I saw the president would greet the press every day. When you were in that courtroom, were you thinking to yourself, I'm sitting next to the next president? Or were you saying to yourself, I just got to keep this guy out of jail?
I was thinking both, because I was thinking I had to keep this guy out of jail so he could be the next president. And so it was an extraordinary attack from all fronts, right? Not only in the Manhattan courtroom, but with Jack Smith in D.C. and Florida and Atlanta, and then the civil case across the street where they tried to take everything from him and his family. And then after all that, you had a bunch of states say, you know what, you can't be on the ballot. So talk about an all-out war to try to keep him from becoming the president. Oof.
What was your role in that? Were you dealing with your own legal defense team almost for the president?
Oh, yes. Yes, the whole defense team. This was a true team effort. And so because you didn't want to do something in one case that would negatively affect the position of another. So we worked closely as a group. There was probably 15, 20 lawyers that were really part of the group that were trying to make sure we stay aligned. A lot of those folks are working for the president now, by the way. So
right, I know. They're in total reversal. So now we have a situation where people are clamoring because they don't like the president. They're not over the fact that he won again. People like John Brennan saying this yesterday, cut 44.
The fact that he's able to do that, and members of his party and his MAGA base continue to explain and apologize for him or rationalize what he's doing, is just so, so troubling and worrisome that this person who clearly is unhinged, and who I think the 25th Amendment was written with Donald Trump's in mind, because allowing someone like this to continue to be the commander in chief and to control the tremendous capabilities of the U.S. military, including our nuclear weapons capability, which he seemed to allude to when he said he's going to just eliminate an entire civilization. Again, we really are in very, very troubling times.
Is John Brennan, does that rattle you?
I mean, it's the same thing he's been saying for probably 10 years now. Doesn't even rattle me a tiny little bit. I mean, if you think someone like him can say that, when he was just standing by quietly for the past 4 years when Biden was in charge. And here we have a situation where President Trump is doing exactly what he said he would do to make America safe again. And yes, no surprise. So it doesn't rattle. It would rattle me if he actually showed even a modicum of support.
Mr. Attorney General, the other thing would be, should he be educated in the 25th Amendment? That would have to come from his staff.
100%.
So
yes.
And do you know a staffer that would say to himself, this is not the president who's working 20 hours a day needs to be ousted?
I mean, it's the work that President Trump puts in every day. One of the folks that is very close with me that works with the president got a call from him at 2 a.m. We get calls from him at 7 a.m., 8 a.m., midnight, and not These are not joking calls. These are calls where we need to get work done. And so the idea that President Trump is doing anything other than working hard for this country is absurd.
Good. The word is, Chairman Jordan says that the walls are closing in on him. What do you know about that investigation into him, his role lying under oath, the Russian investigation and everything predated you being there?
So I will tell you that there's a lot of public information about what Brennan did, and that's something that the American public can comment on and read for themselves. There are criminal investigations ongoing, as has been reported, and I will not comment on the status of that, except to say the following, that we have very limited time to fix what happened in 2016. Going forward, we have very little time to address what happened with Comey and with the entire change of administration from Obama to President Trump and the decisions that were made by individuals to try to stop President Trump before he even took the oath of office. And if you think that has not happened in our history before, that has never happened before. And now that it's 2026 and we're looking back and finally having a full all government effort to under that. When I say all government, I mean the intelligence community. I mean the Department of Justice, Tulsi, the FBI, all looking inward and saying, what did we do? I assure you there will be results from that investigation.
Well, I watched Dan Bongino come out and put on social media, just discouraging basically how much corruption went on, what he found now that he was at the FBI that went on during the Russia investigation. And then Tulsi Gabbard came out with a press conference, addressed the media about it. But I haven't heard much about it since, about what went on in that transition phase where Barack Obama, Joe Biden, John Brennan, James Comey went ahead and drummed up a Russia collusion scam that was tossed to the side of the road, but looked extremely organized. So they tried to bring James Comey into court. The case did not go forward. John Brennan has not been brought to court yet. What can you tell us?
That investigations should not be rushed. And that the worst thing that I could do to any investigation is talk about it, because right. It not only prejudices the investigation, but it makes for a tough road.
Is it on your desk? Is that on your desk? Is that something that's
See,
on your...
See, Brian, you're very good. You knew this a long time. See, that's talking about it, right? I love it. I love it. I'm not being critical. I'm being complimentary. Now, listen, I think that when there is something to say to the American people, you will hear about it. And believe me, I don't say that as a just stand by and let us do our work, because I get it. This is something that folks have been extraordinarily focused on for years and years.
Because you went to CPAC, and that's probably one thing they bring up to you, right?
Yes. I said the same thing to them I'm saying to you, man.
Right.
I can't... You know, and it's not... I say the same thing to the president, by the way, okay? Because I don't mind the come on, what are you doing, DOJ? Let's move faster. Let's move faster. And that's because we have a limited amount of time. But what folks need to understand is that faster is not always better. Okay, faster is just faster. And so we are moving we are moving apace in all these investigations, not just what you're talking about, but everything that we're doing to make America safe again and to fulfill the president's agenda is something that takes up all of my time every day.
So John Solomon was on with Sean Hannity last night, exposing that the DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, has come out and found out about the Ukrainian impeachment. I know they get confused. It was all a sham. The whistleblower was a Democratic operative. Cut 45.
We'll see what the FBI does, but all day today been really significant reaction. Tulsi Gabbard accused her own former Inspector General of the Intelligence Community of weaponizing a whistleblower to hurt Donald Trump and basically ignoring the instructions of the Justice Department. The Inspector General was told this doesn't meet the standard to report to Congress. He did it anyways. Why would the Justice Department tell him that? Because the government knew all the way back from the moment this allegation was made, this whistleblower had bias. He had lied about a key fact in his interactions with Senator Schiff's or then House member Schiff's staff. And there was deep concerns that he only knew things hearsay. Nothing he knew was firsthand. He admitted so in his document.
So they had a whole impeachment vote. It took up 3.5 weeks of the country's time. Nothing else got done. It poisoned the well, in my view, between Zelensky and Trump that still exists today and I think is hurting the defense of Ukraine. Do you, What could you tell me about this?
I can tell you exactly what I think what Solomon talked about last night is exactly true, which is that what we see. Now, the question is whether there's anything criminal that happened as opposed to just being disgusting, dirty, un-American,
yes,
political, gross conduct. And so I'm responsible for anybody that violates the criminal laws. I think there's no doubt that it's everything else I just said. It's disgusting, gross, anti-American political conduct that should never be, should never happen again. But man, it goes back to the Russia, Russia, Russia. That was not true. Okay, so a year and a half of the presidency was taken up by something that was completely made up. Like, there's something there. No, there was nothing there. At the end, Mueller said, maybe Trump obstructed justice. Obstructed justice because he said this was not true and to stop it. Okay, right. That's all that investigation showed. So then you talk about what happened with the impeachment. We learned that at the time that it was not even anything that rises anywhere near criminal, much less something that is a high crime and misdemeanor. And this is, look, we are exposing, and by we, I don't just mean me, but Tulsi and the FBI and CIA, a lot of gross conduct that happened a decade ago.
And you realize how it's all related? There was a thought there was something going on with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden in Ukraine. And that's not unrelated to what we found out that Joe Biden, Hunter Biden were doing in Ukraine.
That's right.
And then when the FBI gets the laptop that would confirm it all, they get mad at the guy that dropped it off, and they never do anything with it. That's scary to me.
Yeah, it's a culture change. It's scary. But guess what? Here's the good news, and I try to make sure people understand this. That is not what this administration is about. The leadership at the FBI, Tulsi, CIA, DOJ, there is a meaningful change. When you hear people complaining, all these people are leaving or getting fired or they're not able to do what they've done for years and years. Yeah, that's right. You're not. That's right. We are changing things. The FBI has been totally over. There's an overhaul happening. Oh, yeah. That's right, there is. You know, Tulsi talking about the intelligence community and the shortcomings there and doing it in a critical way. That's right. We are looking inward, and we didn't do that the first time around maybe as well as we should. We should have, mostly because we were under investigation the whole time. But we're doing it now, and President Trump has greenlit all of this. You ask President Trump, you go in there, say, President Trump, we're thinking we should release this. Here's what it shows. It shows something that happened a long time ago. He doesn't even let you finish your sentence. Release it. Let the American people see it. So the transparency, and it's a flippant word now, but transparency is what the American people want. What really happened? And that's what we're trying to do.
Acting Attorney General Todd Blanchard here for a few more minutes. We'll take a short time out and come back. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I was targeted because I worked for Turning Point USA, because I'm a brown woman who thinks the wrong thing, because I am a Christian. They were mocking me for my religion. They were mocking me for my political views. They, like I said, told me that I had no right to be on a public street, and they made sure to run me out and brutally assault me multiple times as I was trying to leave. So that's the United States of America in 2026, and my main question is, how was this allowed to happen in President Trump's America?
And that's why Savannah Hernandez, Turning Point USA, a contributor, went up to the Minneapolis protesters, anti-ICE protesters, to ask a few questions. And you see it on camera. She's getting beat up. The acting attorney general, I'm lucky enough to have him in studio. Todd Blanche is here. I'm sure you heard a little bit about this case. You can't keep everything in the air, but that's not okay.
It's not okay.
Have you guys taken this up?
Yes, absolutely. Listen, putting aside the assault, the idea that it's okay in this country to have a quote, peaceful protester blowing a whistle in somebody's face, knowing full well local law enforcement will stand by doing nothing, not because there's anything wrong with those young men and women, but because their leadership has ordered them to do nothing, and then no shock, it leads to violence. And by the way, if that was an ICE officer that did that, if that was somebody that was on the other side, then you would have the liberal left media would be going nuts right now over that conduct. But instead, it's downplayed as no big deal. And the video's all over. It's everywhere. And it's exactly what we are going after, is that type of conduct to try to turn the tide to say that you can't do that.
So we heard about the Black Lives Matter got millions upon millions of dollars. The money's gone. The people are gone. What happened to that money? Are you investigating any of that?
Yes, we are investigating all kinds of NGO money that is taking advantage of our laws that give them tax-free status, that give the people that donate the money a tax-free donation, and then gives the people that receive the money the ability to spend it without, you know, in ways that are potentially illegal. So we have multiple investigations of that. You've already seen some cases that we've brought over the past couple months in that space, and we're going to continue to investigate.
So you do that. I also think the foreign money that's putting into these protesters that show up, next thing you know, they're anti-Iran, then they're anti-Israel, then they're pro-Palestinian, or they're always negative Trump. Where are they coming from? We know they're outside entities. What's the challenge in tracking that down?
That's another big part of our investigations, to stop that flow of illegal money. I mean, the challenge is that these guys are good at hiding their funds and getting the money into the hands of people that are, their only goal is anti-American rhetoric. And so all they're trying to do is destroy the fabric of this nation.
It's Chinese in a lot of cases, because they know what the hot buttons are in America.
Sure. And it's also that there is, and by the way, all they want to do is destroy the fabric of our country. So how do you do that today? You attack President Trump and you attack ICE. American people don't want that. Mm-hmm. American people put him into office. American people overwhelmingly voted for somebody who's going to fix the immigration problem. And yet here we are being led around by these external forces. And all of a sudden, there's this view of this country that President Trump is doing something horrible around illegal immigration. It's pure influence by foreigners, for
right.
Sure.
So Eric Swalwell had found himself in a bunch of trouble, and today is a press conference with another accuser coming forward. I know that's necessarily not federal crimes, but in what way might this cross your desk? Because just on a side note, that shouldn't matter for his legal case, he was one of the leading antagonists when it came to the Russia investigation. As you know, making up things in whole cloth, going out and profiting off the president. Actually, he thought he was going to be a presidential candidate if he fell flat on his face. But now, does that interest the Department of Justice at all?
Listen, we are always interested in any sort of crimes committed by anybody, especially against the most vulnerable. And if we learn anything of any of the folks that come forward, that there's a federal crime that should be investigated, I assure you the FBI and HSI will without a doubt investigate. I've been watching, like you have been, over the past several days with what's happening to him, and we'll see what happens.
Right. You said the rape charges are state crimes. If then do in fact come forward,
right.
But what is not a state crime is the nanny, hiring an illegal.
Right. You can't pay somebody. You can't hire somebody illegal. You can't pay somebody off the books. You can't transport women across state lines for the purpose of prostitution. So yes, a lot of the alleged conduct is not necessarily federal crime, but we'll see.
Todd Blanche, have you let the president know you like this job?
I have shouted it from the rooftops to anybody that asks that I love working for this administration. But I'll tell you, I would do anything in this administration. If President Trump called me and said he had something else he wanted me to do, if he wanted me to do something from the outside, this is the honor of representing him as a private lawyer was the honor of my lifetime. Being asked to serve in this administration is the honor of my lifetime. Whatever job he asks me to do, I'm going to put my head down and do it.
What would you do differently than Pam Bondi?
Pam Bondi and I are very close, like I said. And what has to be done differently by not just Pam Bondi or me, by anybody, is we need to make sure that the entire Department of Justice is working full steam ahead every day, because we don't have a lot of time.
And you just got to make sure, too, as acting director, you always come on our show. If that's okay.
That's done. Done, Brian. All right, thank
Tom
you.
Tom Blanche, congratulations on all you've done. Great seeing you in person, getting a chance. And thanks so much for giving the audience 30 minutes of your time.
Thank you very much, Brian. I appreciate it.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Ladies and gentlemen, after three periods, the final score of 7-1, your winner, and still the Real American Freestyle Cruiserweight Champion of the World, Kid Donovan, Kyle Dake!
Now, why would I open up a segment like that? Because Kyle Dake is here, reigning the inaugural and undefeated Real American Freestyle Cruiserweight Champion at 190 pounds of solid muscle. Also solid muscle, Chad Bronstein, co-founder and CEO of Real American Freestyle. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Right? Well, I mean, you're a veteran by this point.
I know, I love it.
You're here as a rookie, and now?
I'm just like my, I don't know, like 8 shows in with you, I think.
Right.
But
Ryan's an OG. I always say it on every show, but we're here because of Brian. He introduced us to Fox.
Well, you're going to be somewhere. I'm just so glad you're on Fox Nation. It's Saturday, and you're going to be in Philadelphia. Did you have any hesitation about joining?
Not really. I mean, at first it was always like, well, there's been so many attempts at something like this. But
always team-oriented, right?
Well, some yes, some no. But it was all wrestling people. And it took somebody who had a marketing vision, something that was a little bit different, that could bring in more of a show. And that's what RAF is. It's way more of a show, and it's way more family-friendly than, you know, being in a high school gym and rolling out a mat, you know, an hour before.
Very true. And now for people to know, you are a two-time Olympic bronze medalist, four-time senior world champion, and 2024 U.S. Olympic team trials champion. So you came in, this is the prime of your career. So this league is starting at the exact right time, right?
Yeah. I mean, the prime of wrestling is in the mid-20s, so I'm pushing the edge, but I feel like I can push the envelope a lot, like, you know, what Tom Brady and LeBron James have been able to do in their respective sports. I'm 35.
You must use great moisturizer.
Yeah.
You must
have
had a very easy life because you look like you're in your 20s.
I always get made fun of because I say I'm getting younger every year.
Right.
And I just take care of my body. You know, it's really what I focus on. I have a business around it. I spend most of my time just thinking about how can I be the best I can possibly be. And, you know, I just spend a lot of time trying to be great.
Well, that's great. So, Chad, what do we expect in Philadelphia?
Philly's going to be another great show. I think, you know, every show we do, and we talk about this every time I'm on here, but we're seeing more and more people show up. In Tampa, we had a sold-out arena. And Philly, we're going to see the same thing. It's going to be a great card. I mean, every card we have Olympic, like, Kyle's been on since day one, so he's seen the evolution. And I think a big thing, you know, for Kyle and everyone that came on board, a lot of people followed once they saw guys like Kyle joining. But Philly's got Olympic gold medals competing. You know, you're going to see Kyle Snyder again for a second time on that card, defending his belt. You see Merab, who's UFC champ, going up against Henry Cejudo, who was an Olympic gold medalist and a two-time UFC champ. So that would be a great matchup. Armin Sarukian, who's become kind of a star in the league, going up against Uriah Faber, who was on the last card. And, you know, there's a lot of returning, you know, Helen Morales is a female Olympic gold medalist. Right. She's going to be wrestling. So a lot of great, it's hard to even say all the people, but it's going to be a great card.
I can't pronounce Vladimir's last name.
Kanjikashvili. I got it.
You got it?
Kanjikashvili, yeah.
All right. So you've told me right away, you got people reaching out from around the world. Where's this guy from?
He's from Georgia. So he was an Olympic gold medalist in 2016. He wrestled Bo Bassett on our last card. And Bo Bassett, who's 19 years old, senior in high school, beat him pretty bad. But he wants to get back. You know, he hasn't wrestled in a long time. But internationally, we have athletes coming from all over the world. I mean, a lot of guys want to beat Kyle Dake. Kyle's 4-0 in the league. So he's got bounties on him. So from all different countries.
Kyle, how great is that? It is a global sport. So how great is it to get the international flavor in?
Oh, it's huge. You know, like there's only so many times where you can wrestle the same guys from your country. You know, I wrestle them five times a year. You know, it's like, it's not that interesting for fans, but now we're able to bring in guys from all over the world, whether it be Belarus or Georgia or Russia or wherever. You know, I want to compete against the best guys, and that's what I've been doing.
Do you feel pressure to put on a show or just win? Do you feel pressure to do both?
I feel like I want to do both because I'm a pretty exciting wrestler anyway, but it's not fun for the fans if you just go out and try to win 1-0. You know, the fans want you to go out and put yourself at risk and try to take chances and go score.
And that's a different approach from going for the NCAA championship.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is just a mindset and how you approach the sport. For me, I just want to wrestle the best I can possibly wrestle. And a lot of people are wrestling to win. And I think the winning will take care of itself. I think if I go out and show what I can do and do what I've been practicing doing, then the result will take care of itself.
Right. Chad, how great is it that the other bodies like UFC is embracing this? They've been working with you, right?
Yeah, we have a great relationship with the UFC. I mean, I always say this, like, it's very additive for the UFC or any other league because if let's just say Bo Nickel, for example, who's Kyle's good friend, he's fighting at the White House. We're not going to go and interrupt his camp for his fight at the White House. But when he's done with that fight, he can wrestle five or six times while he's training, because he's only going to fight twice a year. So for them and us, it's a good relationship to have, because people are building their brands even bigger on our platform. So it's, in my opinion, it's a great partnership, and so far so good.
I mean, you go 135 all the way up to 215. And of course, you have headliners and main events. You got championship bouts. But I think what's interesting about wrestling, you can wrestle. You don't need, like boxing, you need a certain period off. Kyle, how much time do you need off between matches at this point?
I mean, if I could wrestle once a month, that would be more than enough time.
Because in high school and college, I mean, you wrestled all the time, right?
I mean, when I was a kid, I would wrestle Saturday, all day Saturday, and then I would drive and go to another tournament on Sunday. So I was wrestling, you know, two tournaments a weekend. And then in college, you're wrestling one or two matches a weekend. So we're just used to that here. And other countries aren't like that. They'll wrestle once every couple of weeks, once a month. But now we actually have a platform to be able to go out and compete at a high level more than three times a year. And that's what's really exciting for me, because the more data I get, the better I feel like I can be.
What do you mean by data?
So I go out and I compete, and you know, I'm doing a certain technique and I'm like, man, I'm really not getting it. Or someone's getting to my leg way more than I want to. Okay, let me make this adjustment. But in the practice room, you're not necessarily getting that same intensity. Like, you'll still have a really intense practice, but going through the whole process, the anxiety, the big lights, you know, the cameras, the media, everything like that, you don't really get that often in this country or anywhere. And now we finally have it.
I'll say one thing about Kyle too, is Izzy, every time Izzy and I call Kyle and ask him to wrestle the best guy, he says yes.
Right. Is that on you, by the way, is that different? Is some
people not everybody want, I mean, people want to, you know, they want the time to train. And like Kyle said, I think get data if they don't know that person and haven't seen them wrestle. But anytime we've asked Kyle, and everybody he has wrestled in our league has been top ranked people. So he always says yes.
Right, RAF 8 is in Philadelphia, streaming live Saturday on Fox Nation, April 18th at 8 o'clock. It's you're in the arena at Temple University in in Philadelphia. So how many does that hold?
It holds about 7,000, well, 8,000, but we have obstructive view for our show, so about 7,000, and we'll sell it out.
You'll sell it out. What have you done in terms of security should tempers flare again?
We learned our lesson in Arizona, but if you were in Tampa, we had a pretty big security detail. There was going to be no messing around, let's call it. Our number one thing is to make sure we have a lot of kids in the audience, is that they're safe. And right. It's a family-friendly sport. So obviously the action was great. I think, you know, Tampa show was an incredible show without having a fight. So, you know, that fight obviously went viral, and it was great for the show, but we were able to have just as, you know, successful a show without having a fight on our stage.
So what has been the outreach from other leagues and other countries? Do they want to bring it other countries?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to go to other countries. We were supposed to be in Bahrain. I was in Bahrain with Izzy Martinez. We were there about 2 weeks before the war started. And obviously there's been bombings over there, so we can't go to our Bahrain in May.
Would you have gotten crowds in Bahrain? Did they
100%. We have a guy named Elder Khan, who's kind of our international liaison for us, and that's where Tazadinov trains and a lot of our athletes. But we would have sold out the crowd, because you can bring wrestlers from Iran, you can bring wrestlers from Russia, you can bring wrestlers from Japan, everyone there, because, you know, it was an easy spot and destination. So we're looking at right now going to possibly Armenia or Bulgaria, Mongolia. There's all these countries are reaching out with their athletes saying, we want you guys here.
And they're wrestlers. I mean, there's a ton of wrestlers there, right?
Yeah, so RAF, in the United States, we're a real American freestyle. But when we go to other countries, it's going to be RAF Japan or RAF India, because we want to respect, obviously, all the countries we go to. But like I said, a lot of our U.S. athletes and our international athletes, they want to see that on their stages in their countries.
Right. Kyle, you know what's so interesting is that, so soccer, played soccer a whole life, but there was just no pro opportunities. The NASL came and went for 20 years, and then all of a sudden the MLS starts, tries to get traction. I saw it at lacrosse. They launched Major League Lacrosse. The best players in the world are here, but they have nowhere to go, and now it's pretty much their part-time. But what I think they loved was when with lacrosse, when the All-American at 22 gets to go against the 28-year-old All-American, who they might have both went to Syracuse.
Yep.
They both went to, you know, Penn State. Mm-hmm. Do you find the generation wrestling is the cool, one of the coolest things about RAF?
Yeah, being able to compete against, you know, some of your heroes is pretty fantastic. I mean, like, how great would it be to watch Michael Jordan play LeBron James,
yeah,
or you know any of those guys? How great
can you imagine
it be
if they couldn't go pro and yeah, they were done after college?
Yeah, and but now we have something, and now I can wrestle the national champion from this year's NCAA championships. I graduated in 2013. What was that? 13 years ago? Holy moly, I'm old. But it's just like what are these opportunities now that we have? And I think a lot of it has to do with just like, with Fox Nation backing us up, with Chad having this idea, with putting on a fantastic show that people want to be a part of. And, you know, obviously I love competing against the best of the best. I love showing these young guys what it's like to be one of the champs.
Actually, to that point, Jason Nolf is going up against the current in Philly against an NCAA. Was he Joey Blaze took second place?
He's NCAA runner-up.
Yeah, NCAA runner-up, but still an example of Nolf being a three-time NCAA champion, now wrestling someone that's currently in college or just took runner-up.
So tell me if this is correct. I've always heard, as much as people look dominant in college, huge leap to get to the national team at Olympic level. Mm-hmm. So has there already been an established leap from Olympic to RAF? Like, is there a difference in talent and strength and quickness?
I think RAF is still young to claim that. I mean, you have the best athletes in the world pushing for the last 100 years to be Olympic champions. And now we're on our eighth month of trying to be an RAF champion, and we're getting there. We're getting the best of the best who want to be here. Guys who have proven themselves in the past being, you know, at the Olympics, winning world championships and doing that. I think there will be a time when RAF takes over all of that and the best of the best guys continue to wrestle, but they focus on RAF. We're seeing the young kids do it now, and we're seeing the old guys come back and be like, hey, this is awesome. We want to be a part of this.
So, Chad, it's not a mistake that you're on college campuses, because you want that next generation of wrestlers, especially you were at Penn State, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did Penn State, our second show.
Yeah.
And now we did it in Arizona. We were on campus.
Which are the most dominant wrestling.
Yeah, Arizona was a great thing. But obviously, Izzy, my partner, he's been in wrestling for 20 plus years. You met him. And so he, you know, we were at the NCAA's.
WWE type wrestling.
No, real wrestling. Izzy has a club in Chicago.
Oh, Izzy, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Bischoff is obviously, you. Bischoff runs a great production, great show. Really, when you walk in there, you feel like you're at the most premium show you've ever been to. But what I was saying is, we were in the NCAAs in Cleveland, myself and Izzy, just going down there, and everybody knew RAF and were coming up to us and saying, we want to be a part of it. And when we first met, we didn't have that same type of reception. So I think now people are realizing that we're investing true. We have great investors, great partners. Fox is being one of the biggest outlets there is. People are realizing we're not going anywhere. RAF is going to be a company that's going to be RAF 300. So I think that people want to be a part of that.
And Kyle, when can we see you again?
I gotta find an opponent. I know I'm not wrestling RAF 08, but maybe 09. We'll see what happens.
All right, then you got to come back.
Yeah.
So right now, let's focus on 08. Philadelphia streaming live Saturday night, 8:00 on Fox Nation. Make sure you check it out. Chad and Kyle, congratulations on everything.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah,
thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate you.
Is 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
All right, thank you very much. And that is my cue to start talking. By the way, I'm going to be on a number at the top of the hour, so please join me there. Let's find out if there's indeed more to know. A teacher complained about students. Yep, the complaints are everywhere. In fact, my daughter's a teacher, and she said this is 100% true, that parents have stopped parenting and that kids aren't doing their homework and they're not learning. They do what they can in school, and they go back and they actually know nothing, especially after the summer. Pew Research reported that print book reading is down from 72% in 2011 to 64% in 2025. E-book reading from 17% now up to 31%. That's good news. But in terms of what students know, They're arriving. They don't even have, they have an eighth grade teacher who says they have to explain to kids what a noun is, and they blame the parents. And I also found out that when you tell the parents that kids aren't doing work or acting up in school, they don't seem to care. Next, sad news. Dick Vitale announces cancer diagnosis. This is the fifth time he's gotten cancer. He's 86 years old. He's a legend and one of the finest people you'll ever meet. He says, I've beaten melanoma. I've beaten lymphoma. I've beaten vocal cord cancer. I've beaten lymph node cancer. I'm 4 for 4, and I'm fully confident I'm going to go 5 for 5. He says he's overwhelmed with the amount of love coming his direction. Next, I thought this was a joke, but the year of whimsy is maxing out. Dating apps say on Hinge and other places that the word whimsy is now being used and increased over 72%. I think it is short for whimsical. They want to know that people they're dating are into having fun and being lighthearted. My sense is if you're dating someone that's looking to be lighthearted and fun, that's okay. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if they're without goals or direction and they're lighthearted and fun, that gets annoying. Next. The new trend in weddings is cruising. They're cost efficient, they're glamorous, and they're trending. They said more couples are leaning into destination weddings. Some are going to the all-inclusive route, opting to say they I do's on a cruise ship. My feeling, though, is you do a wedding, got it. But then where do you go? You have to live with these people for the next week or two. You don't even really know them. I think it can get pretty awkward. Next, is masculinity in crisis? These TV shows suggest yes. Now, I've only known one. John Hamm's character on Apple TV's Your Friends and Neighbors. I don't get that. Do you get that? I don't get that.
I don't, no.
Because he's a masculine guy that robs homes. He loses his job as CEO and then starts going into rich neighborhoods and robbing homes. I'm pretty sure that's masculine, if not illegal. Steve Carell's character in Rooster, I don't know what that is. And DTF St. Louis features two lost male antagonists, Jason Bateman and David Harbour. Big turnoff. Next, only way to eat a banana is with a knife and fork. According to etiquette experts, the etiquette expert said, and the author of a new book about it, says the only way to eat a banana is not eating it, I guess, right out of the rind. I don't know anybody eating a banana with a knife and fork. But we'll have to handle that next time. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm going to run down and do outnumbered in a moment. Don't move.